Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Very superstitious. Writing on the wall.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:03, the time, hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Thursday, May 14th, 2024, 2026 edition, 2024. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, located at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Currently 59 degrees, but it feels like 65. It's going to feel like 79 or maybe even warmer later on in the day. Mostly sunny, pleasant. Tomorrow looks to be great. The weekend looks to be real nice as well. You were wondering about the temperature in Philadelphia for the start of the PGA Championship. Right now it's 55, but it feels like a 53. So their feel like goes down, our feel like goes up. Hour two of the program brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers at 4900 Poplar Avenue between Mendenhall and St. Nick, on the web at GattisJewelers.com. You've heard me talk about James Gattis Jewelers for years. They've been around for 60 years. So many repeat customers because they know they're getting a great product, they're getting great service, and they're getting a very fair price at James Gattis Jewelers. Whether it is that beautiful diamond engagement ring, personally designed wedding sets, diamond engagement rings, the diamonds, now a lot of people going with the lab grown. They have the natural earth diamonds. They go to Antwerp every year. They bring back a variety of beautiful diamonds. It's always changing, but they also have the lab grown diamonds as well. The difference is obviously the lab grown diamonds are more inexpensive, very, very nice, but a lot of people prefer the natural earth diamonds. You have both of them available for you when you're picking out that special engagement ring, wedding ring, personally designed wedding sets at James Gattis Jewelers. And they have a price point to suit everybody's budget because they understand there's a lot of competition. So when you're looking for that special engagement ring, make sure James Gattis Jewelers is one of the jewelers that you check out. And also for all your jewelry needs, they are full service jewelers. They got two bench jewelers ready to serve you daily. James Gattis Jewelers, open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5. Saturday 10 to 4, closed on Sunday.
Want to say a big welcome to all the folks in town for Barbecue Fest this week. Got underway last night and will continue through Saturday. And the weather is obviously cooperating beautifully for Barbecue Fest this year. Looking forward to getting out there for a bit tonight and tomorrow night as well to see all the folks out there. Should be a great time for everybody out at Tiger Lane. Goldberg is going to be out there. Jay, you going to go out there and see Goldberg?
Bill Goldberg?
Yeah, I thought about going out there to see Goldberg, but I don't want to get ran through a table, get kicked in the head or nothing like that. I'm a fan of dude.
Well, just behave around him. Don't do anything to make him mad.
Hey, that's kind of a hard deal. That's
that would be funny.
Dude.
Like everybody that walks up to him, he just picks him up and body slams him through a table.
Why is he going to be there? What's the connection?
He's just coming to hang out, eat some barbecue. He's a judge.
He's doing a few different things. I can't remember what Teddy's in, but he's going to be out there. Goldberg will be out
there.
That's
really cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping to run into him. But yeah, I don't want to get slammed through a table. I'm going to try not to make him angry.
I asked Dustin Starr, would he be out there? He said he wasn't going to be out there in time because he's on vacation out at the beach. But he would hate that he missed it. So
Bill Goldberg, of course, Goldberg the wrestler, made an appearance a couple of times on the Goldbergs. The TV show has nothing to do with it. It's just, you know, his name. And
well, just like King Kong Bundy made several appearances on Married with Children. They wrote him in as the uncle of the Bundys.
Oh, yeah, but I'm making the connection because his name's Goldberg and the show's name is the Goldbergs. I don't think there's a connection there.
The Patriot Tactical Booth. He's going to be there Friday, 2 p.m. You can go by and get photos and autographs. We're going to be making other special appearances throughout the day.
Very cool.
So, yeah, you get a chance to go see Goldberg out at the Barbecue Fest or the World Championship
When's he rolling into town? Does he roll into town today?
I think he may be here he'll be here later today. I think he's supposed to appear tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
He'll probably be here later today at some point.
We have a loaded list of guests tomorrow, including Kenny Mayne from SportsCenter fame.
Favorites.
But we can always squeeze in Goldberg if we can figure out who's running that show. So I mean, I wouldn't mind Goldberg here in studio. Let Jay Ham get thrown through a table or something. That'd be nice. But you mentioned the weather. I don't know what we did to deserve it this year for Memphis in May, but fingers crossed, so far, so good for the Music Fest and now for the Barbecue Fest. By the way, and I want to get into some football, but I was looking during the break at the highlights of the game, just again, the Pistons-Cavaliers game last night, and I'm thinking to myself, in the overtime session, there were a lot of mismatches for Cleveland with their offense versus the defense that the Pistons had on the floor. And even though Harden in the overtime wasn't great, and even Mitchell, I don't know what Bickerstaff was doing with the roster he had out there, with the players he had out there.
Yeah, Atkinson's winning their chess match right now.
Yes.
On the mismatch bar, you know, in terms of the matchups. I saw exactly what you were looking at. And that's, I saw that kind of really coming when they started the second half. Because I'm like, okay, Cleveland, they're right there. They were down 8 at that point. It's just a matter of just putting the right combination of guys on the floor. He just had to find it. Then they chopped that down, and they end up going. They won that quarter by 12. They won the third quarter by 12. I'm thinking the whole fourth quarter, I'm like, okay, they should win this game. You know, it's right there for the taking for them. Detroit has nothing else going but Cade. Dan has made a few plays, but it's like it's turning in Cleveland's favor. If they can get this road win, that'll be the big win for the series.
Who do you think gives the Knicks the best competition? Detroit or Cleveland?
Cleveland. And they still would, they probably will beat them at 5 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say probably Cleveland.
Is Duncan Robinson expected back for Detroit in case it is the Pistons?
I would hope so, but I don't. It was a back, right?
Yeah, I don't know what his issue. What? How long they're?
OG Anunoby is expected back for the Knicks, so you're adding another big piece.
Right, he's had a week off with the hamstring, so he probably would be ready to go.
It has worked out perfectly for the New York Knicks. Again, no NBA action tonight. The NFL schedule will be released sometime today. The full release. They have been revealing different games really over the last 2-3 weeks, maybe even a month, announcing some of those international games. But in all, there will be 9 international games, including week 1, the game down under in Australia. But you have games in a bunch of different countries now. They are making the NFL a universal product. I mean, I don't think it will. Well, maybe one day I'll be long gone. But one day maybe it'll eclipse soccer, football. I don't think so, because there are a lot of countries out there that play soccer and do not play American football. But a lot more countries are now interested in it. Whether or not you care about Goodell, give him a lot of credit for making this more international. We know basketball is international. They play basketball everywhere. Baseball, we're starting to see it a little bit more of the international flair. We were talking about, was it on this show? We were talking about Australia and baseball now is big in Australia. We know in the Far East it is. We know in Latin America it is. Like I said, basketball everywhere. Hell, they play it in Iceland. But NFL, our football, I think this is great, and Goodell should get a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, I mean, then I'm not sure what their goal is, what the kind of the max number of international games that they're trying to get to, but yeah, I mean, it's they're going everywhere they possibly can and exposing folks to American football, and NFL, no matter where it goes, is a very popular sport.
They want a legitimate European league. I know they've had things in the past, but a legitimate NFL European league. And I think that will happen really sooner than later. College football. ESPN reportedly, the Suits, don't want the college football playoff to go beyond 16. College football coaches, for the most part, want the expansion to 24. It's obvious. More spots, more chances they keep their jobs. But we had the news yesterday from, was it Jim Phillips, talking about the ACC commissioner, talking about the consensus from the general the ADs and the head coaches in the ACC They want 24. We know the Big Ten wants 24. Sankey? Well, apparently Sankey's not on an island anymore because ESPN. We know how powerful the networks are. They dangle the carrots, like 24-karat gold, in front of these conferences. Usually what they want, they get. How powerful are they, and can they prevent this from going to 24, even if most other than Sankey want it to go to 24?
Well, there's been talk all along that ESPN was kind of against the 24, and it makes sense because ESPN, the more games, that means Fox or whoever, most likely Fox, can get involved in the playoff, where ESPN right now owns the playoff. Although certain, they're farming games out to TNT, but, and also there's, that ESPN kind of looks at it as some of those big time regular season matchups right now that they have, could be lessened by the expanded playoff. It's no surprise that Greg Sankey is on the side of ESPN. I mean, it would be dumb for the SEC and Greg Sankey to do anything to possibly make ESPN mad. They write really massive checks every year to the SEC, and will continue to write very large checks to the SEC. So, it's... That's, I'm sure, a big part. Obviously, the conference championship games and the deal with ESPN, all of these things. I mean, ESPN is Fox is powerful, but ESPN is more powerful in the world of college football. So if you have the SEC and ESPN on one side, is that enough to stop it? We shall see. Again, it probably comes down in the end to what are you willing to give us in order for us to give in and go to 24?
An organization called College Front Office has been compiling estimated NIL valuations for 68 teams, the Power Four conference teams, with the ultimate goal of determining which team has the most valuable roster in the sport. I don't know how close they are. They have some information. They probably don't have all information. But the list dominated by SEC and Big Ten schools, as you would imagine. For this upcoming season, they list Texas at number one. Do you know how much money they're guesstimating for the NIL, for that football program for this upcoming year? You have a guess, J.M.?
25.
Go north, Eli.
Wow. 45.
47, good guess. 47.9. $47.9 million for the football team, for the players, for this year.
Wow.
47.9. Miami, $44 million. Ohio State, $43.5 million. LSU and Lane Kiffin, 42.8. Oregon, 42.8. Notre Dame, 6th at 40.4. Texas A&M, 38.9. Bama, 37.2. 8th. Texas Tech, 36.3. Tennessee, number 10, 35.7. Ole Miss right behind at 35.2. Ahead of Georgia. They estimate Georgia at 34.2, number 12. USC, 34.2. Two more, Oklahoma, 33. And then Michigan at 32.4. So you had Texas Tech from the Big 12, Notre Dame independent, and that's it, right? Everybody else? No, Miami from the ACC. So 12 of the 15 top NIL football teams this year, football programs, are from either the SEC or the Big Ten.
It just means more.
It's eye-poppy. But Indiana's not even in there, and you know Indiana's got a lot of money this year for football, too. I mean, for football as well as basketball. Basketball, they made a big jump in basketball, but football, we know, obviously, there's a ton of money. Not even top 15.
Therein lies the issue for these schools, as many have pointed out. This is not, and was it Ohio State people? Yeah, I think it was Ohio State that the president, the AD, and I guess it was the board president. I can't remember who was the third, but they wrote the big, basically, paper saying this is not sustainable. Like it is impossible. Because this is Ohio State, even at schools like that, with unbelievable amounts of revenue coming in, you're operating at a deficit. You can't do this. It's impossible to sustain what they're doing, trying to compete. If you're trying to compete in football and basketball, but even if it just really is just football, but you just there's no way. This is not a sustainable model for these universities. They can't possibly do it.
I mean, even major companies that have had so much success, there's layoffs. Apple, there's layoffs. ESPN, layoffs. FedEx, layoffs. There's always going to be layoffs. So money just can't continue to go up and up and up and up and up. I can't imagine. There's got to be a ceiling somewhere for the media rights, the revenue that they bring in. You would think. We had that Nebraska news the other day for the individual players where they denied the NIL money. I forget all the details from a certain company because they said they weren't doing anything.
Like that's
defies the.
It's the college. They upheld the College Sports Commission's ruling on those. Now that is not a done deal because there is still a lawsuit.
About, of course, there is.
Whether the basically the College Sports Commission deemed that yes, companies like Learfield and Playfly, these multimedia companies, are associated entities, and therefore they are under the umbrella where the College Sports Commission. The arbitrator ruled in favor of that the College Sports Commission did have the right to reject these. Now, again, there is a lawsuit separately trying to get it where those companies are not deemed to be associated entities with the university, which makes them under a separate set of rules. I think that is supposed to be coming up later this month, that the arguments, I believe, are supposed to be held in that case. But it's, I think, the same lawyer and all that stuff. But it is still not a done deal. Kind of what that whole thing was dealing with is not a done deal at this point. And again, there are still these conferences are trying to figure out, you know, they still have not all signed and basically said that they will all cooperate with the College Sports Commission rulings on these things. I mean, there's still a million different things going on as far as the actual settlement is considered and what the powers are of how the College Sports Commission decides these NIL deals and everything else.
It was supposed to be a pay-for-play premise and also pay to do something.
It was not supposed to be paid for play. That's the whole point.
I'm talking about with the companies. Part of it. No, I'm talking about with the companies. They were supposed, and I shouldn't say play. I don't mean actually playing the game of football or playing basketball. I mean playing, in other words, doing something for the companies. They were supposed to be doing something. They weren't just supposed to be given money because of who they are and for what program they play for. They were supposed to, if they were given $1 million from this company, do something, whether it be commercials, public appearances. What they found out there is that they didn't do anything for the money.
Well, what those companies are doing is they're basically buying the players' NIL rights for the idea, because we're like Learfield, we're going to use them for our partners in commercials. But there's no set thing of what they're going to do, and they may not end up using them. That's what the College Sports Commission is like. You can't just buy their rights for the idea that you may use them for something.
Right.
You have, there has to be something. There has to be
something concrete that they're going to do.
For commercial goods or services that they are absolutely doing, that you can't just pool their rights together to have at your disposal.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's still a lot to be determined going forward on these, the multimedia rights holders and what they're able to do.
Getting back to that list here, as we're up against a break, but you look at the top 15 and you don't see schools like Penn State, Florida State, Clemson, Auburn, so many schools. I mean, they're up there. They're going to be up there. They're not top 15, though. But it is a arms war going on right now, an arms race, as they say. And according to this story, doesn't mean that they're going to win it all. But Texas right now, with the highest amount of NIL money doled out to their players, including their quarterback, Arch Manning. Folks, take your skills to the next level at Shoot 360 Memphis. It's a big week for Shoot 360 Memphis because it is the EYBL tournament that's going on over at the sports the event center over at Liberty Park, the great facility there. They're going to be hosting teams from all over the country. Great teams that play on the Nike circuit, EYBL, including Team Thad, the teams that participate for Team Thad. And I bring that connection up to Shoot 360 Memphis because Thaddeus Young is one of the owners of Shoot 360 Memphis. And players that play for Team Thad and others have gone through that system, have played and shot the ball so many times in those shooting bays that they have at their two locations to become better players, better shooters specifically, using the Shoot 360 technology. It is a revolutionary basketball training facility. You've never seen anything like it unless you've been there and have seen it for yourself. And you can do that by giving them a call or stopping by either location and ask for a tour. See what it's all about in Collierville, 85 Market Street. That's the original at 901-316-5500. That's where they have shooting bays with the Shoot 360 technology. Now, the big one in Cordova, the 50,000 square foot facility, they have everything, all the bells and whistles. They're on Big Orange Road. You can call them at 901-779-3176. You don't have to be a member of a team. You can just be a kid trying to get your shots up, trying to become a better all-around basketball player, maybe mid-grade schoolers trying to be high school players trying to be college players. And again, repetition is going to really help. Plus the coaching you get, the one-on-one expert coaching that they provide for you at Shoot 360 Memphis. And you can join on a monthly basis. You can't beat that. Join up for a month, try it out, see what you like about it, see what you don't like about it. But I'm going to tell you right now, I would bet most of you are going to love it. You're going to want to join for more months, and you can do so at Shoot 360 Memphis. The future of basketball training is here at Shoot 360 Memphis. When we come back, we'll be joined by Kerry Miller, talk some Major League Baseball. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Diamonds are forever!
Woo! Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:29, the time, halfway home on this Thursday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Coming up in Hour 3, the head coach of the Memphis Tigers football team, Coach Charles Huff, joins us at 9:05. And then at 9:30, Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC. We got Kerry Miller coming up in just a moment. Big college baseball series to end the regular season start today. All around the country in the SEC, Ole Miss will play at Alabama tonight, 5:30 pregame right here on Sports 56, 98.5 FM, 5:30 Friday, 1:30 on Saturday. The Memphis Tigers with a huge three-game series on the road at Charlotte beginning tonight as they try to qualify for the American Conference Tournament in Clearwater, Florida. Right now, it's time to talk some Major League Baseball with Kerry Miller.
It's time to talk some baseball. Joining Greg and Eli is Kerry Miller from the Bleacher Report. Here's Kerry with Greg and Eli.
He is Kerry Miller. He covers both Major League Baseball and college basketball for Bleacher Report, co-host of the Unnamed Bracketology podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Kerrence James and listen to him every single Thursday right here on Sports 56 Mornings. Hey, Kerry.
Hey, Greg. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
So I wanted to start with these damn injuries, and not just injuries, but guys who are struggling at the dish, and it's big name after big name after big name, from Vlad Guerrero Jr. to Fernando Tatis Jr. to Cal Raleigh, who took a shower with his full uniform on to get out of a slump. Even Shohei Ohtani, who's pitching incredibly well, is not hitting the ball extremely well. We had another big name, Juan Soto, got hit with the pitch, I guess it was. He had x-rays on his foot. That returned clean. But, again, these numbers for the guys that we expect are not there. What's the problem?
The problem is most of them are on my fantasy team. So I have Raleigh, Tatis, and Ohtani, and it's been a nightmare for my batting this season. But, yeah, I don't know. I know I forget who it was that really kind of dove into what's been going on with Raleigh, because he had gone hitless in 9 consecutive games. I think it was just Baseball Savant took a look at that, and he's striking out like crazy. He had that one surge of he had 5 home runs in 7 games, and outside of that, he's batting like 115 and striking out something like 40% of the time. Like, it's, I don't know if he's just pressing because trying to maintain what happened last year, or I don't know if playing pretty much every day last year, we kind of question it all season long, whether that's really feasible for a catcher, even in, today's era of rest and recovery and everybody knowing how to rehab and all that. But maybe he's just worn down. I don't know. Maybe he'll catch fire in a week. Who knows? But, yeah, it's been a weird year for, not having those, outside of Judge and, Schwarber's obviously been home run lately. And Bobby Witt's been on fire lately, but he started out terribly as well through the first couple weeks of the season.
It's like, if you just look at the batting average leaders, it's like you got Brandon Marsh, Otto Lopez, Shea Langeliers, Ildemar Vargas, Troy Johnston, Riley Green, Xavier Edwards. Who the hell are all these guys?
Who's who?
Well, for a little while there, it was Vargas, who was, I know he started with the Diamondbacks, but he was here with the Nats for a little while. He was leading the majors, or maybe not majors, leading the National League in OPS. And then when he lost that lead, it became Mickey Moniak, who was the number one pick for the Phillies a decade ago. And then they threw him away, and I think it was the Angels had him, and they threw him away. And all of a sudden, he's sitting with the Rockies. Like, it's been a weird year. The guys who are hitting are not the ones you expect to be the ones doing so.
Moniak, by the way, will probably be the all-star. Last year was Hunter Goodman, a friend of our show, Menthian, but it's going to be Moniak this year, I think, because he does have the numbers, as you mentioned. I had mentioned earlier about Juan Soto. He wasn't hit by a pitch. He fouled the ball off his foot, but they said the x-rays are negative. He's going to be okay. But the Mets, I don't think they're going to be okay. They haven't gotten much better. They're 17-25. They're 12.5 games out. They're a -22 run differential. Mendoza has not been canned. Why are the Mets having the problems that they're having?
I mean, just everybody's underperforming, with the exception of Clay Holmes, I think. And even he, like, if they were to even consider, a trade deadline fire sale of sorts, Clay Holmes has a player option for next season, and those are usually untradeable because you don't want to get a guy and then have him get injured and you're stuck with that, or you get a guy and then he's awesome and then you just lose him after 2 months. So I think they're in I think it was Mark Feinson for MLB.com who talked to rival executives about what it would even look like if the Mets were to sell, and basically everybody's like, it doesn't make sense. That they're just going to begrudgingly let it ride and hope that all these guys turn things around. I mean, you see their level of desperation that they called up their top prospect, A.J. Ewing. Now, granted, it worked out great for them. He had a triple, and he scored the walk-off run last night, so maybe that was kind of the magic that they needed. But, I mean, they've just been banged up. Bo Bichette is drastically under-delivering on his whatever astronomical contract, I think 3 years, $126 million. Obviously, you know, Juan Soto, $765 million deal. So they've spent the money. It's just they're not getting any ROI, that's for sure.
To this point, what do you think – who is the best kind of story in baseball to this point?
The best story. I mean, honestly, it might be Mickey Moniak, but just to give you a different one, I'll say Matt Olson with the Braves.
Yeah, dude, he is.
Has really blossomed into a possible MVP candidate, and then, you know, he's the Iron Man. He's played, I think, in 820-something consecutive games. Maybe it's even more than this at this point, but I think he's top 10 in MLB history in terms of consecutive games and has an OPS north of 1,000. So I think he's been a pretty fun story. I mean, he's always been a really good player, but he's really stepped up his game this year.
So I was looking up some of the front office dudes for the Tampa Bay Rays because I couldn't remember who's running their show, and it's a guy by the name of Eric Neander, and he has worked for the Rays since 2007. He is their president of baseball ops. He was the MLB Executive of the Year in 2019. I had no idea. The reason I brought that up was because every single year, and I know we talked about this last week, but every single year, without much fanfare, without many superstars, without a high payroll, the Tampa Bay Rays, just every freaking year, they're 28-14. They have now taken over first in the American League East from the Yankees. They're two games clear. How do they do it? They do this with smoke and mirrors every single year?
Well, even the entire American League right now, right? The Guardians are in first in the Central. The A's are in first in the West. Like those might be the three lowest payroll teams in the American League. I know they're not in the majors because I think Miami is dead last, but it's ridiculous what we're, you know, doing more with less with those teams. But, yeah, Tampa Bay, year after year, and they're doing it with, like, in a weird way, at least offensively. Like, they're getting nothing out of Cedric Mullins in center. I don't think they've gotten a home run from second base or shortstop this entire season. They just have, like, three guys hitting well. They steal a lot of bases. And they just find these pitchers out of nowhere year after year. I think that's the big thing for them and why they kind of dropped off there the last 2 years with, you know, didn't have Shane McClanahan. Now that he's back, even though he's not quite what he used to be, he's really that, you know, kind of leader that they need. They somehow turned Nick Martinez and Steven Matz into, you know, borderline all-stars. So they've got some, I don't know if it's their executives or if it's their pitching coaches, but they've got some magic there down in Tampa.
The Yankees, they get Rodon back. Cole was supposed to come back soon, right? But now Max Fried has an elbow issue. Anytime it's an elbow, you get worried that that could be a long absence.
Yeah, always. I know he said he's not particularly worried about the diagnosis, but I guess we'll find out in the next day or two if he's going to be out for any extended period of time. But, man, like you said, Rodon just came back and Cole's on the mend. They've already had Schlittler and Fried borderline, you know, probably battling each other for AL Cy Young at this point with Tarek Skubal on the shelf. And Will Warren is sort of that, you know, unheralded guy who has like a 3.0 ERA and would be their number five starter when they're at full strength. So that rotation has been scary good, as it has been in the past. I think it was 2 years ago they had like their starting rotation had like a 1.50 ERA in the month of May or something insane. And then they dropped off a cliff from there. So we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, they've been great. Hopefully the imaging on Fried's elbow is nothing serious.
Well, since you brought up the name Skubal, it's weird. I've heard, oh, maybe it'll be quicker than they think, 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then others say, no, it could be 4 to 5. And then the consensus has been 3. I don't know if you've heard anything different about Skubal, but with him on the shelf for that long, even 2-3 months minimum, Detroit, I mean, where does it put Detroit? Because they were the favorites coming in, and right now they're sitting only 4 games out in a 3-way tie with the Twins and the Royals. The AL Central is still up for grabs, and there's still 3/4 of the season to go. But how hard will it be for Detroit to do what they need to do and what they are expected to do without Skubal?
Yeah, on the standings point is why I can't see them selling. Like, that division is going to be up for grabs. We all know Cleveland will probably be in first place, and they won't do anything to help themselves out by, you know, spending money or trading prospects. So they'll be gettable, it'll seem, for everybody. But yeah, I think the Tigers just kind of have to let it ride. I haven't heard anything other than what, you know, Scott Boras said the other day, that he called it the Scooble scope. Always incredible turns of phrases with that guy. But yeah, I think they're thinking he'll be back before the end of June, or at least that's what Boras says. We'll see what his actual truth. But you know, with Scooble out, Casey Mize has been out. Verlander's made one appearance, so he's working his way back. Like, they, by the deadline, once those three guys are theoretically healthy, and you know, maybe Valdez is done throwing at people and his own teammates and will be an actual asset for them. Like, they should have a top five rotation in baseball, but it's been, you know, a bit of a mess for them.
Can the White Sox sustain this, and could they actually be buyers at the trade deadline?
I think so. I mean, their payroll is somewhere around like $105 million, and 3 years ago it was like $200 million. So they should be, you know, of all the teams in that division, they have the most wiggle room with their budget, put it that way. You know, I think I said last week or 2 weeks ago, or maybe I just wrote about it, who knows, but if Mike Trout is up for grabs, could be the White Sox who go for him. I think they're going to, if they are buyers, they're definitely going to want to upgrade their rotation, which is currently a, you know, who's who of, you know, Davis Martins and Noah Schultz's, and Eric Fetty's back there again and somehow pitching well. He only pitches well for the White Sox. I don't get it. But, yeah, I think they could be in it to win it. They've been an exciting story, 21-21. I saw after that win last night, it's the first time they've been over 500 after May 1st since the end of the 2022 season, which makes sense because they've had three consecutive seasons with 100-plus losses.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure it's happened, but is it, I don't know how often it's happened, has a team gone from 100 losses to, say, winning a division?
So the Royals, just a couple of years ago, they went from 106 losses to making the wild card. I think they improved by 30 wins or something. They went from 106 losses to 76. I don't know if anybody's ever gone straight from, you know, 3 years of absolute garbage to winning the division. I know the Astros, after their tank job, it took them a couple of years to make it all the way back. But, yeah, it's, when you go get a guy like Murakami and he's possibly going to lead the majors in home runs, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that, and yes, yeah, if they were to go out and make a big move, like get a Mike Trout or somebody like that. What about, I've started to hear some things about Yordan Alvarez. Is there any chance the Astros would move him?
I don't think that makes sense to me. He's got 2 years left on his deal after this one. I think they're each like $26 million or something, which for his power is nothing on what he would be worth on the open market. But I think they could be more short-term sellers. They don't have a whole lot impending free agents this year. I think it's, I mean, McCullers, who hasn't been pitching well, Brian Abreu, who's been a real letdown out of their bullpen, a couple of other relievers as well. But where it'll get interesting with the Astros is if they're willing to sell off on their guys who have 1 year left. So they have Christian Walker for another year. Jeremy Pena has 1 year left before hitting free agency for the first time. And they think they have a club option on Isak Paredes for next season. So would they be willing to trade all three of those guys? If so, holy cow, they'd get a lot of prospects in return.
Paredes is like, he's going around the league, man. It seems like every year he gets traded now.
Yeah, he's the, I think we talk about him every bit as much as Sandy Alcantara as a trade candidate.
NL Central, pecking order taking shape. Cubs, Brewers are moving. Cardinals sitting there at third. They've been a surprise. Pirates fourth. Reds, I'll get to the Reds in just a second, but Mizorowski, another great performance and another exit early because of the cramping. I mean, how serious of a problem is that?
Yeah, I think it almost looked like it was a joke, the early exit. Like, he went out to warm up for the eighth and then came out, and like both him and Pat Murphy were kind of giggling about it. I don't know if they were just trying to get him a standing ovation and buying a little extra time there or what. So I don't know. Hopefully he's fine, because good Lord, he threw like 103 miles per hour on his last pitch of the game. Like, the guy is a Martian. But yeah, he was phenomenal, but then they lost the game because Gavin Sheets hit that three-run homer in the ninth, and then God knows the Brewers weren't going to score on Mason Miller.
they're still, though, playing a lot better. They're now 6 over .500, plus 54 mm-hmm. run differential, still trailing the Cubs. But also in that division, like I said, it's kind of the pecking order starting to shape up where we expected. But the Reds got – this has to be an anomaly. The Reds are over .500, now only a game over .500, and they are a minus 40 in run differential. How does that happen?
Yeah, they were crazy lucky early in the year. I don't want to say lucky. They had good fortune. That's a synonym, Terry. But in close games, I think they were 13-0 in games decided by two runs or fewer, or I think they had a couple of like extra inning games that they won by three runs or something. But it was any time it was close, they won. And then all of a sudden, they just started losing all of those games. Like yeah. It was unsustainable to keep winning like that. And I do think they still have some staying power. I think they just got Nick Lodolo back from the IL, although he might be back on the IL. I haven't checked. They're waiting on Hunter Green to get back. They're waiting on, you know, Andrew Abbott to start pitching better like he did last year. I mean, they should be pitching better than they are. So I think maybe they can come back around if anybody aside from Ellie De La Cruz and Sal Stewart decides to start hitting for them.
You mentioned Mason Miller. What is his contract? Is he locked up long term, or is he coming up?
Yeah, I think he's not even. I think he's still pre arbitration. I think the Padres have him for three more years before he even hits free agency.
Because I'd just like to see what value teams would put on him right now, like as a closer, if he was a free agent.
Yeah,
the dude's unhittable.
It was crazy heading into the offseason, you know, with the Padres having all their starting pitching issues, you know, scheduled to lose Cease and King, although they did ultimately re-sign King. And, you know, obviously they knew what was going on with Darvish before we did and still haven't seen Musgrove. So they had all these starting pitching questions and were like, well, maybe because Mason Miller came up as a starter. I think his first appearance in the majors, he went six hitless innings. And there was talk about, you know, maybe he'll move back to the rotation. And everybody's just like, why in God's name would you mess with the greatest closer we've ever seen?
It's amazing what he's doing. It's amazing what Shohei's doing on the mound. But quick, final question. So who would you, right after Mason Miller, who would you put as the second best closer right now in Major League Baseball?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, Raisel Iglesias has been great this year, although he was kind of terrible last year. So you question whether he'll be able to keep it up. But what the Braves have there with Iglesias in the ninth and Robert Suarez in the eighth, like that's the bullpen that scares me the most, I think.
It's really, really working. Kerry Miller is a sports writer for Bleacher Report. He covers both Major League Baseball, obviously, also covers college basketball. That's why we get to talk to him all year long. You can follow him on Twitter at Karen's James. Listen to him every single Thursday right here on Sports 56 Mornings. Always great stuff from Kerry Miller. Thank you, Kerry.
You got it. Take care, guys.
You too.
Folks, if you're thinking about breakfast, you should be thinking about Sunrise with their two locations serving up that delicious food, or their biscuit sandwiches, which are absolutely delicious. The P-Love with the fried bologna, egg and cheese. Of course, you got sausage, egg and cheese, bacon, egg and cheese, and they're throwing their homemade biscuits, the big old square biscuits that they've got. Man, oh man, are those things delicious. But also the kitchen sink, or you could look at one of their breakfast bowls. All kinds of great menu items for breakfast, but also great lunch as well that you will find at Sunrise with great sandwiches, great salads. They're open from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. daily for you. They got the two locations, 670 Jefferson Avenue. That's the original. 5469 Poplar Avenue. That is Sunrise East in East Memphis. But both, again, serving up great breakfast and great lunch as well. If you go to sunrise901.com, that's where you can find the menu. You can get information about catering there on the website, and you can order online as well for pickup, and that makes it very easy if you don't have a whole lot of time in the morning, but you want to get some of that delicious breakfast. Go to sunrise901.com, place the order online. When you get there, pop in the side door, grab your food. You are on your way in the blink of an eye. Great way to pick up some of that great food on your way to work in the morning. Again, Sunrise with the two locations. That's on Jefferson Avenue, downtown, Sunrise East in East Memphis, and online at sunrise901.com.
You're tuned to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin,
for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:53 is the time. Charles Huff, Memphis Tigers football coach, joins us at 9:05. We'll talk with Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC at 9:30 as the PGA Championship is underway from just outside Philadelphia. Steven Yeager has a bogey. He got up to 4-under, but just bogeyed a hole. He's 3-under. Bud Cauley, 3-under. Cameron Smith, 3-under. The three players right now who co-lead of the big names. I guess Xander Schauffele is a big name. He's off to a good start at 2-under through 5, starting, I guess, on the back nine.
Yeah, he just made a bogey to drop from 3 down to 2. One of the how in the heck does this happen department, Garrett Higo was penalized 2 shots for being late for his tee time. How in the hell how do you show up late for your tee time at the PGA Championship?
That's impossible.
They said he was on the practice putting green, but not within the area defined as the starting point at his starting time. Like, what are you doing? Like, how are your caddy? Like, how in the world are you possibly not there on time for your tee time?
You know, if I was a pro, because I'm so anal, I'd probably be there, like the guys before me who just teed off, like as soon as they tee off, I'm walking over there. I'm taking no chances. That's the way I am. I'm very punctual. I'm like a football coach. Like Coach Charles Huff will be calling into the show. He'll call in early. Football coaches always do that, right? You're on a different time scale with those guys. But with the PGA Tour, yeah, maybe somebody was late before because of there was an incident one time I remember, and I can't remember the details, though. But it's not like it's unprecedented, but it's very, very, very rare. But I'm with you. I don't know how you can do that.
Like, it's just – again, I understand, like, if you're caught in traffic or something, like there's there's an accident, shuts down the highway, you're trying to figure out a way. If you're Scotty Scheffler, you get arrested, you're in jail, whatever. Like, those things – but you're there, like you're on the grounds, and you're just on the practice green, and you're not, like, I don't understand how in the world you don't get over there to the tee on time for your tee time and have to take a 2-stroke penalty. That if he misses the cut by like a stroke, I mean, you talk about an idiot, man. Oh man, that would make you.
I got lost. I forgot where the first tee was. University of Memphis announcing officially yesterday. This is now official. Josh Holloway, Jaden Reed, Cornelius Williams. They've been incrementally announcing players, but I guess they're waiting for them to sign on the dotted line. So those three are officially Tigers. Holloway, of course, is a Memphis native. He was at Texas A&M. Before that, was at Samford for a couple of years. So they get Josh Holloway. Reed played at South Florida for a couple of seasons before going to Northwestern and playing in the Big Ten. And then also Williams comes from North Alabama. Others that have already been announced, Brandon Cummings, Jerry Deng, Rihards Vavers, Tylik Weeks, and Luke Almodovar. Of course, you have the freshman in Cello Jackson, Parker Pounds, and Fred Smith. But again, unless something's happened in the last couple of days, I don't know if Fred has signed yet. I heard that he had not signed yet on the dotted line. Once again, Penny Hardaway emphasizing at the Tigers on Tour event that happened the other day in Lakeland. See, got it right. Not Arlington, Lakeland. That he's going to put that 15th roster spot in his pocket and keep it for a rainy day and go with the 14. But again, if something happens where Smith ends up not staying at the University of Memphis again, all the expectations are he'll sign, then there would be another spot open. I don't think that's going to be the case, but that's, again, what's out there right now. Hopefully they can get that straightened out. One of the local products brought in from Briarcrest Christian. All right, when we come back, hour number three is going to be busy. We're talking Tigers football with Coach Charles Huff. And while it may be only May, the excitement is starting to build for Tigers football and the really new stadium. Let's be honest, it's renovations, but it's basically going to be a completely new look. And then Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC on the PGA Championship. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk.